Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, January the 9th, 2010. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today, I am so incredibly happy and honored to bring Tanya Marie Evans to you. Just to tell you a little bit about Tanya, she's a licensed entertainment attorney. She's also an assistant professor of law at Widener University School of Law, so congratulations to her for that achievement. And for nearly a decade, Tanya has hosted several literary conferences throughout the city of Philadelphia and around the country, and I personally attended two of those conferences, and I know she brings in wonderful, wonderful speakers, authors, people who know how marketing, who know the business of the book business. Very valuable conferences that she put on. She's also the author of the book Shine. She is an outstanding public speaker. Other books she has written include Seasons of Her, Contracts Companion for Writers, Copyright Companion for Writers, and Literary Law Guide for Authors. And Tanya is online. I encourage you to visit her online. She has tons of resources that I'm sure you will find valuable. Her website is www.legalrightpublications.com, and it's spelled the way it sounds, LegalWrite. Publications. Please go over, bookmark her website as a favorite, because she has so many resources that she provides for free to people who visit her at her website. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Tanya.
Thank you so much, Denise. How are you?
I am doing fabulous and so good to talk to you again. I remember the conferences that you had that I came to as well. What a blessing. What a blessing. I got to put them up there as some of the top writers' conferences, and I've gone to ones put on by colleges. It's way up there at the top of the list as far as the resources and the valuable advice and the speakers that you bring in. So I'm so honored to have you here with us. You've done so many things. Oh, my goodness. And then when I saw that you were an assistant professor, I said, this woman just does not stop. It's almost like every time I check up on something you've done, you're doing something even more.
Oh, I appreciate that very much, because you saw me at the beginning, and I feel like it's been an incredible ride and a journey as we both have navigated the publishing industry and seen pretty much every aspect of it, and we've learned and we've grown together, so I appreciate that we remain connected through all these years.
Yes, I do as well. I want to ask you so many questions to ask. When you were young, you have accomplished so much, and you're somebody that I truly do admire. I wanted to ask you, which would you say you dreamed of most, of becoming a writer or an attorney?
It's funny because those who know me from way, way back know that I first started, I was very athletically inclined, and I'm a former professional tennis player, so my focus was really on professional sports at the time.
Okay.
And of course, you know, my mother is an attorney as well, so that was always in the background. But I was mostly focused in the beginning on being an athlete, but also, oddly enough, either a doctor or an architect. So I came to writing more in a way of being a cathartic experience for me, and I never intended initially that I would be out and about sharing the information. And I used to journal all the time. I'm an only child, so either I was my own best friend or my journal was. And I found my way to poetry, and from there continued to develop the craft of writing. And at some point, that, you know, there were parallel lives to the writing and my practice. And at some point after I left the tour, went to law school, writing and my legal career merged. And so thus Legal Right Publications was born, and the books and all of that. So I wasn't particularly focused on writing per se, but I used it as a cathartic experience and to tap into my creativity. I didn't know that is what I was doing at the time, but that's, you know, as I reflect back on it, I know that's what happened.
Okay, okay. Before we close, I wanted to ask, and I should have asked you in advance, if you have it available, if you'd read a couple of poems from one of your books to us. If you don't, it's because I'm just asking you at the last minute. But if you do, I certainly would love for you to, and I'm sure our listeners would, for you to share that with us.
Definitely. Well, there's always one tucked away in my mind. Everything else, I would have to run and get a book. But perhaps I can recall Find Your Own Shine if it goes without a hitch, then it's a divine experience.
Okay. Where I wanted to ask you before you read the poem later on in the show, and I thank you again, Tanya, because I'm kind of putting her on the spot. I'm just asking her right now. I didn't think to do it before because you read your poetry so incredibly powerful. I wanted to ask you next, where did the concept for the book Shine, because I've heard you read some of your work, where did that concept come from?
Oh, boy. I remember, actually, I wrote Find Your Own Shine when I was in law school, and I remember hanging out with a group of sister friends, and we used to study together and hang together, and at the time, I was also running a poetry venue called Verbal Herb, and once a month, I would get everybody together, because I was also, you know, the very cool but very school-focused nerd type who sat in the front. So I don't think anybody would describe me as a nerd per se, but I definitely sat in the front. And so there was always this pull to actually have some type of balance while I was in school. So I ran Verbal Herb, and I remember us sitting around, and I also remember a quote that has been misattributed to Nelson Mandela, but actually comes from Marianne Williamson, and it's kind of, I'm remembering off the top of my head, but it's basically, who am I to be so gifted, so talented, so fabulous, something like that. And then the next line is, who am I not to be?
Wow.
And it resonated with me so strongly and profoundly that I left the room where we were, and the way that, you know, Find Your Own Shine basically is the way that it came to me. It was, I don't remember doing a whole lot of editing or editing at all. And so that's why I really do believe in the divine gift of writing and the written and the spoken word. And so that's really where it came from. And I look back on that now, and I draw strength from it. I didn't know how powerful it was at the time, and I can't really take any credit for that other than to say that I was open and willing to sit down and put pen to paper at the time.
Wow. I know Shine is also out on CD, and being that you're an entertainment attorney, with e-books beginning to sell more, and the Kindle, and these instruments, the technology making books available to people in different forms, whether it's CD, again, or whether it's through like an e-book, with Shine being out on a CD and you being an entertainment attorney, would you share with us that experience briefly and let our listeners know who might be thinking about taking their book into a CD form from a legal aspect? Is there anything in particular they need to look for as far as a contract to make sure they get the best deal?
It's hard to say because every deal is so different. It's a huge question, and maybe when we get into more of the specifics of different legal aspects, it might be easier to touch on it. But generally speaking, when someone seeks a publishing deal or is presented with one, primarily the main or primary right that is being acquired is the right to publish that work in book form. And anything above and beyond that would be an additional right or what we call secondary or subsidiary right. And so there would be a separate discussion about, assuming there's sold separately, a separate discussion about royalties that are based on the sale of the printed book and royalties based on the sale of the audio version. Now, done and to combine it. So most of my books at this point, all the legal reference guides have a CD-ROM on the inside back cover, and Shine certainly had the audio component together. That might be a different conversation because everything would be packaged together.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It just depends on if it's done separately or together, and that would determine how the deal would go down.
Which would you say, though, it would be best, to package it together, to do it all at the same time or separately? Or does it not make a difference?
I think it makes a big difference, and I remember thinking about this when Shine came out. I think it was 2001, and people were not even really doing this. There were a few people who had combined – to do the book CD combination. And my thought at the time was, I'm not Maya Angelou. I'm not Nikki Giovanni. I sell when people hear me. But if it's sitting on the shelf with the other two and name recognition is important on the shelves, my book wouldn't sell. So people really needed to hear it. And it also distinguished my book from other books at the time. I think now everybody has a book CD combination. And it's a powerful way to combine the media. So some people receive the words well off the page. Some people receive the words, you know, orally by listening. And so to be able to combine it, either to give people the choice or to have the experience of having me there with them, even when I, you know, when I'm not. So that was the business side of the decision to do that, and it was very successful.
Wow, you're a smart businesswoman. I'm telling you. Can you tell our listeners? I want to discuss, you know, each of your books briefly. Can you tell our listeners here at Off the Shelf about Seasons of Her? What inspired you to write this book, and what are some of the life themes that Seasons of Her addresses?
Mm-hmm. Well, Seasons of Her was my first, or is my first, book of poetry, and it's basically a collection of all of the poetry I had done up until that point. I didn't really write poems for Seasons of Her, but it was my first go at publishing and putting all of, you know, the body of work at the time together. And it's divided into the four seasons of life. So sometimes you're in a winter and you're very introspective, maybe shut off, closed. I'm certainly holed up in my house right now with 19-degree temperatures here. And sometimes, you know, we are in that space, for lack of a better word, in our life. And sometimes it's about spring, about rebirth, about energy, vitality, new beginnings. And so the poems in that section reflect that energy and spirit. And sometimes you're in a summer. So it's sultry and love and heat and passion, and the poetry in that section reflect that energy and spirit. And then my favorite season is fall, and that is about the proverbial harvest of self. When you really
wow.
come into your own, when you really start to shine, right?
Yes.
Other poems from that, I believe, I Will Tell Myself is one. Other poems that really show that you have come into your own and now are reaping the benefits of all the work that you have done throughout the other seasons. And so it was fun to try and go through the poems at that time and figure out which one would go in which season. And so that is reflective of where I was at that time in my life. And it's not, although it's Seasons of Her, I have received a lot of feedback over the years, even from men who were able to tap into that energy and spirit within their own lives as well.
You know what I find interesting when I hear you say this is that I think oftentimes when we're going through a like the winter time, or I find that we think that we're the only one going through that. It's not a pleasant time, and you know, like you said, it's a dryness. You might feel lost or not know exactly what's the next step you should take, or a person might feel stuck at a point in their life before things begin to become clear. When you're going through it, you feel, I've talked to many people, when you go through it, it is tough, it's emotionally tough, and you feel like you're the only person going through it. So I think one of the blessings in your book, The Seasons of Her, is that people who read it can see that it's not just me, and you can see it's more of a common thing, just like, you know, you connected with nature, the
right.
seasons in nature, and it can help people, I think, get through that winter season in their life. I wanted to ask you next about the Copyright Companion. I get a lot of Copyright Companion for Writers and Literary Law Guide for Authors. And again, we're speaking with Tanya Marie Evans, who is a licensed entertainment attorney and an author herself. She's online at www.legalrightpublications.com. I do encourage you to bookmark her website as a favorite. She has so many resources there. As much as I know about this over the years, I still get questions about this that people find is very confusing to this day. I don't know if it's because of the way of the legal terms that are used. I'm not sure. But can you explain to our listeners, as far as book form, what does a copyright protect, and when should an author apply for a copyright?
Okay, very good questions, and they are also questions that I receive a lot as well. And so I know my work is never done, Denise. I will always have a job. I know this to be true. And it's tough stuff. This is the type of information that even lawyers who do not specialize in this area find confounding. So we can just start there and everybody take a deep breath about the information. It's tough stuff, and the rights are very important. So I'm glad that we're taking the time to sit down and actually talk about it. So first, copyright is a type of intellectual property, and when we hear that phrase, it might be big as well. So intellectual property is really property that's created with the mind. And there are three basic types, and we can go into the others a little bit later, but primarily copyright is a federal law that protects artistic and literary works that are fixed in a tangible form. And when I say fixed in a tangible form, I mean something that is written down or recorded or in some other way fixed and capable of being copied. And it's not all things. There are some things that copyright doesn't protect, like ideas, facts, names, short phrases, although you may be able to protect short phrases if you connect it with the sale of goods or services, and then that would be a trademark. I hope we can talk about
okay.
that as well. But primarily, again, a copyright protects a literary or artistic work that's original and has some modicum of creativity and is also fixed in a way that is capable of being copied. Now, this is also a common misconception that there's something additional that people need to do in order to have a copyright.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the difference between having your rights and being able to protect them. Once you have that literary or artistic work that's fixed, for instance, a manuscript, music that's written or recorded, and it's fixed on the CD or on the page or in your computer, then the rights attach to that work. There's nothing additional. We'll talk about the benefits of registration, but there's nothing additionally someone would have to do to create copyright. Copyright is created automatically once those elements are satisfied.
Go ahead, because I was going to ask you a question, but go ahead. You might touch on it.
Okay. However, the benefits of registering your copyright, and by registration I mean with the Copyright Office, Library of Congress, means that you have the benefit of being able to, one, file a copyright infringement claim if someone ever infringes. There are benefits about securing attorney fees and statutory damages and all the other things that become a part of actually protecting the copyright once it's in place. But you don't have to first register it before the rights exist, but you should, and I would say as an attorney, must register it, although the law doesn't say that precisely. You know, if you want to be a literary entrepreneur and truly protect your work, that you should register it as well. It's very easy to do, and we can talk about registration as well, but go ahead.
Yeah, I know that the registration for a book and also for recordings through the United States in the United States. I'm sure we have listeners around the globe, but in the United States Copyright Office or the country that you reside in, many countries have copyright
Correct.
Laws. Here in the United States, I think it's like $30-$35. You go online, you fill out the form, and it's very, very simple. The title of your work, who's the creator of the work, and then after you finish that, you you just submit a copy of the finished material to the Copyright Office.
Correct.
And it's basically that simple. But I wanted to ask you, okay, so let's say somebody did not register their copyright, and I've always heard this, that you have the copyright as soon as you create the work. So let's say I didn't copyright my material. I've got a book and I've had it out here for, let's say, 5 years, and I find out that somebody, either through magazines or through another book of their own, have taken at least 10 to 20 pages lifted out of my book and put them in magazine articles or in another book. Now, I haven't registered it. Could I go to court exercise those rights? Could I go to court to do that because I never registered it?
Absolutely. The problem is, the short answer is yes. You can register your copyright at any time during the duration of copyright. So copyright protection lasts for the life of the author plus 70 years after the author's death. At any point in time during that time, the copyright can be registered for purposes of filing the action. Problem is, if you register after the infringement has happened, you lose some rights. So instead of being able to get statutory damages, which means there are specific amounts of money that are built into the Copyright Act that mm-hmm. you don't have to prove. Generally speaking, when we walk into a courthouse and we want to sue someone, we have to prove not only that they did it, right, but also the amount of money or damages that we are owed. And it can be very difficult to do and actually cost prohibitive in the case of copyright, because maybe, you know, a type of infringement is someone takes Find Your Own Shine and goes to every coffee house in America and performs it and doesn't charge a cent, right? So they haven't made any money, so it's difficult for me to prove what I'm actually out. But if I've registered in a timely fashion, then that means that I can go in and say it was infringed this many times and I get this many dollars because of the statute. That's statutory damages. If you file after the infringement has occurred, then you are required to prove actual damages. So that's a valuable right that you would lose, right?
Yeah.
And so that's just one example of why it's important to register sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and a lot of people, once they become successful or more broadly known, like a Tyler Perry or Quincy Jones, they won't, you know, they're like, don't send me any manuscripts.
Right.
I can't with these copyright lawsuits.
Right.
Left and right. When you become successful, then you've got to protect yourself.
Right.
Not that somebody's using your work, but that they're suing you, saying that you are using
right.
their work. So, I mean, understanding that law, I think, is very important, of whether either side that you're on, whether you're protecting your material or whether you don't want to have to go to court with somebody saying that you, you know, infringed upon their copyright. Can you also explain, I've had people ask me this as well, if you use somebody's name, or let's say I grew up with someone and they've gone, something about their life is very interesting, could I write a book about that person without their consent?
You absolutely can. It's one of the, you know, we've become familiar with the unauthorized biography and things of that nature, and that's where that comes from. So there's no real, as long as, whenever you're writing about someone else, you do have to be concerned about maybe write a publicity issues or privacy issues, but assuming these are facts that are out, you know, either in the general public or they're newsworthy and you've acquired them by legitimate means, then there's nothing that would, in theory, hold you back from putting that out.
Wow. Wow.
That's
interesting. I'm telling you, I learned something just there. I'm like, wow, that is truly interesting.
Yeah,
wow.
That's where the unauthorized biography comes from, and when people do their memoirs or their, you know, own biography and include information about other people. Now, again, and I talk about this probably in Literary Law Guide for Authors, probably not so much in the other books, but, you know, you have to be careful when you are dealing with private information. And so the privacy laws don't change. And let's see, medical information, financial information, sexual proclivities, all these things, if they're not under common knowledge, and by common knowledge, I mean that can be as small as a family, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are people who have suffered rape experiences. I remember vetting books about very sensitive topics, and it's not that they can't go forward with their books, but then you have to figure out how they got it, how wide known is this, and what would be the potential legal ramifications of it. But generally speaking, you know, you can go forward with information that's public knowledge, and truth is generally a defense to that type of information.
Oh, okay. Can you also explain before we move forward a little bit about trademark? If I wanted to write in a book, I wanted to include something, and I wanted to mention Toyota or palm olive dishwashing liquid or whatever. I know those titles are trademarked.
Right.
Is that permissible in a novel, or do you have to get permission from the company that owns that trademark before you include it in your book?
generally speaking, it's permissible because all of these laws, intellectual property laws, are, you know, we give, the law gives individuals the right to the exclusive use of this type of information for some period of time, thinking that ultimately society will benefit from that. But also we have First Amendment rights and other things that have to balance out these exclusive rights. And so as long as it's incidental use, you know, having the authenticity of a novel, for instance, say that, you know, the character was sitting on the sofa watching Oprah or, you know, reading Essence magazine or they drove a Toyota. These are the type of things that give authenticity there would be considered incidental use.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that, writers should be aware of is, particularly with people, right of publicity issues. You don't want to ever couch it in terms of, and this would hold true for trademark as well, you don't want to ever go so far that it appears that Toyota has endorsed you or Oprah's book club,
okay,
which y'all want her to, has endorsed the book. So it's a difference between using it incidentally for purposes of the story versus setting it up so it appears that there's an endorsement.
Okay, okay. Wow, Tanya, I got to tell you, I hope you got one book buyer out of me from your copyright. I have Shine already, but I'm getting that as soon as this interview's over. Because I know when you do look for legal things either on the internet or you go to the library, you got to go to maybe 20 different sources just to try to pull this together and try to understand it. But as an attorney who's writing a book for authors, you're not going to use language that is just – some of the attorney language is just so confusing. You're like, they're speaking in another language. So and I wonder sometimes if attorneys don't do that on purpose.
Well, I'm going
to
tell you.
I'm just saying, what did they just say? Those words look like English. I swear they do, but I don't know what.
I have no idea. I think it's English, but I have no idea.
Yes, so that means you break it down. So to our listeners again, I highly encourage you to visit Tanya Marie Evans. She's a licensed entertainment attorney and an author, so she understands. She understands. She's online at www.legalwrite, and write is spelled W-R-I-T-E. publications.com. Again, that's www.legalwritepublications.com. I highly encourage you to bookmark her website as a favorite. She has so many resources there. And to check out her book, Shine, Seasons of Her, Contracts Companion for Writers, and Copyright Companion for Writers, and Literary Law Guide for Authors. She can just make the legalese easy for you through her book, so it's easy to understand. And I wanted to ask you again, I wanted to ask you, authors that have come to me, and I do get a lot of writers who come to me with questions, and they're very sometimes confused around contracts and signing contracts with an agent and a publisher. And I want to ask you first, do you find that authors in this world of self-publishing, did you find that authors really understand, even with a mainstream publisher, understand the book contract from a legal aspect? Do you find that authors are becoming more intelligent about that?
Yes and no. So yes, in the sense that the industry has been demystified a bit just with the availability of information, and unfortunately a lot of misinformation, but there's a lot more information that people can access at this point in time through the community of literary friends who have been published and also just out there on the internet or books that are available. So there's a lot more information that is accessible. But the other side of that is this dreaded fear of negotiation that authors have, particularly in our industry, because there's so much rejection, and even the best of the bunch has been rejected dozens and dozens of times before they actually get an offer. And once they get an offer, the most intelligent, most fabulous, most talented, most highly valued writers are willing to sign almost anything. And I've seen it time and time again. I actually become the heavy. I don't want to be the heavy. I want everybody happy. I want it. But I want, you know, the authors, particularly when I was in full-time practice, I wanted them to understand what was going on. And sometimes I would explain it, and they would understand, and I would break it down as I'm talking to you, and they said, "That's fine. When do we sign?"
Like,
it's, And I really do think it has a lot to do, one, with the rejection, and two, with how intimately we connected we as writers and creative people are to our creations. And so we still have a ways to go. You know, Tia Ross from the Black Writers Conference hipped me to this term a long time ago about being a literary entrepreneur. And it really stuck with me. It's a difference between I'm not just a writer, I'm not just a poet, I'm not just an author, I'm a literary entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that at some point you have to take off your creative cap and put on your business cap and figure
yes.
out what's in the best interest for you, just as a brand that is even bigger than the creation, and that is very difficult for most people to do, and it's understandable, but it's somewhat disheartening at times because people have given away the kitchen sink.
Mm.
And a lot more expensive to get you out of a bad deal than it is to get you the one that best suits you and honors all the time and the talent that has gone into these creations.
All right. We want to talk a little bit about a little bit about a book contract, what to look for in a good one, and what to do when you have signed away all of your property rights. But I wanted to ask if now, or should I ask another question, if you could read a poem from your book, Shine.
Yes.
Do you want me?
Sure, we'll do it right now.
Okay.
This is the commercial break, but it's not really, so don't anybody go away.
Yeah, exactly. And stay and listen to this talented author, public speaker, entertainment attorney, Professor Tanya Marie Evans is going to honor us and bless us by reading a poem of hers from her powerful book, Shine, which I highly encourage you to go out and get.
Thank you. So this is Find Your Own Shine. Gracefully, I elude spiritual landmines of doubt, jealousy, and envy, deceitfully planted by those who despise divine divas like me. Those who waste valuable energy wondering who I be, how I be, why I be so fly, how it is I can laugh and sing and hold my head high while it rains and thunders all around me and never get wet. But their confusion is confusing to me because I see the answer so clearly. See, I am a child of God, a unique and individual gift to this universe, an angel who understands from whence my blessings flow, an appreciator of the expansiveness of my earth-toned wings. And I feel my own rays of sun shining. I feel my melodies of life singing. I feel my righteous rivers raging. I feel my defiant winds swirling. I feel my flowers growing. I feel my beauty showing. Consistently exuding stealth like the sleekest jaguar, because, see, I've come to understand it's truly hard being a star. People constantly looking up at my shine, wishing all the time it wasn't really mine. But see, it's God-given, and I've claimed it, and now I own it. And I would lay in an unmarked grave before I allow greedy hands to steal my joy. Now, Lord knows it ain't easy, but then again, no one promised it would be, and now I see why. I must be forever dynamic, and constant motion is lightness and levity elevate me toward a sky of positivity in order to avoid those who spend time wishing they weren't blinded by my shine. See, they whine and weight themselves down. Guess that woulda, coulda, shoulda stuff be too heavy to carry around. Maybe that explains why they be plagued by permanent frowns, that constant melancholy state, awkward gait, that hurry up and wait to see if maybe this will be the day when this diva falls from grace, from my rightful place in the sky, calling myself affirmations, ego-tripping, or conceit, but see, they just can't feel me like I feel me, like my creator feels me, like I feel me. But still they observe me and wonder how they can capture my glow. Well, I long for the day when they discover they already have their own. Find your own shine.
Wow, Tanya. Oh, my gosh. Woo! I'm sitting here telling myself, just be quiet. Don't say anything.
Well, don't Don't give up on the
college. Oh, Tanya. Oh, every time I hear you read, oh, so powerful. And you read that so, wow. Oh, my goodness. Yes, I think it is good that you have the CD with, oh, my God, you are so powerful. So I wasn't even going to ask you this, but to our listeners here at Off the Shelf, I didn't even prepare her in advance to read the poem, and that's how powerfully she read it. Just, oh, my God, right off the bat. Oh, that poem is inside of you. Just to read it that, oh, my goodness. I want to ask you next, for our listeners who were just as equally blown away as I was, do you still, like, read your poetry live? I know you had your literary conferences, and I wanted to touch on that as well to see if, do you still do your literary conferences? And how can listeners come to hear you read your poetry live?
I am starting to get out there and read again. I started with a big-time performance at a birthday party where I rented out a performance venue and invited some of my favorite poets, and I ended the night with a band and I was performing. So that was kind of my entree back on the scene. And there's a great thing going on here in Philadelphia called The Harvest. It's the first Wednesday of every month at World Cafe Live, and I flow through there. Just actually at this point I've been trying to listen a lot and reconnect, because being the lawyer part of me took over for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to deconstruct that, and teaching now as opposed to full-time practice has been helpful, starting to write and quiet myself and slow down a bit. And even last night, you know, poetry and writing is starting to wake me up again, so that's when you know you're back on track. So the best way to find out is either at the website legalrightpublications.com, excuse me, but also iwriteandshine.com. That's my personal website.
I'm sorry, Tanya, once they go there, because you offer so much at the legalrightpublications.com website, at both of your sites, where to see the events you're going to be appearing at, or that you're hosting your conferences, where would visitors go to find those at your website?
So at the top there's a navigation tool or whatever, and events would be what they would click on to go there.
Okay.
So if you want the creative side of Tanya, then it's best to go to iwriteandshine.com.
Okay.
That takes you directly to the book, the poetry books, samples of the CD. Click through to cdbaby.com, or it's on itunes.com, so people can access the music and stuff that way. So iwriteandshine.com is the best way to reach me for my creative stuff.
Okay, and then you have your upcoming events, mm-hmm. Which Tanya is letting us know that she's getting back into her creative events. I just want to touch a couple of, just maybe two more questions for our authors who are hanging on, clinging for some advice, and they may just have gotten a book contract to review. Should they reach out to an attorney before they sign a contract? And how can they find an attorney? I mean, there may be people who are blessed to tune in today to hear you, but they don't know of entertainment attorneys off the top of their head. What would you recommend? Should they go ahead and look through the contract themselves? They say, oh, this sounds good, and then sign it, or should they reach out to an entertainment attorney? And is there a database of entertainment attorneys so they could contact somebody, or what advice would you give them?
Well, on my resources page, there's a link when you go to legalrightpublications.com. There's a resource page that lists some who I have a personal relationship with, and I'm not taking on new clients now, but I am always happy to give a good referral. We are a small group of people who actually focus specifically on literary law as attorneys, and so it is somewhat challenging to find a literary attorney, but there are many entertainment attorneys who have some knowledge, working knowledge of literary law. And yes, when it comes time to sign the name on the dotted line, you absolutely need to consult. And there are a couple mm-hmm. of different ways that you can use the literary lawyer. So in my practice, traditionally, I did more of review and negotiation of contracts. I vetted manuscripts, meaning I would go through and seek out the potential legal red flags, and we try and deal with it, get permissions and the like. And that was the primary way that I was used. But I also did place properties. More often than not, some of the more high-profile clients also had literary agents. So it's not necessarily one or the other. we serve a different role, and maybe we can talk just a moment about that.
You just led into you just led right into my next question.
I was going to ask you. Why would you be such a literary agent with a literary lawyer, et cetera? So the literary agent may not be, and oftentimes is not, an attorney, and that's not good, bad, or otherwise. It's just a reality. I do. One of my colleagues, Shoshana Crichton, who I went to law school with, is an attorney but serves primarily as an agent. But most literary agents are not attorneys, but their role is to place your property. So they have relationships in the industry with the people who can give you a green light for your project. They're an integral part of the way traditional publishing deals are done, and oftentimes, for the reasons that we discussed earlier on the call, publishing companies, big and small, well, mostly the big ones, will not take anything that is unagented, meaning if you don't have an agent or some other professional, a literary attorney, to put it in front of them, they don't want it because they don't want a risk of they publish a book and you say, I sent you my manuscript, and that's my manuscript, and now I'm going to sue you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason. So the agents are really, you know, the gatekeepers to the people who can make it happen. Now, they also have a vested interest in the outcome. So there are many ethical literary agents, but there are some that are not so ethical.
That is so true. That
right?
is true.
So because their bread and butter is the author, they're willing to sell. They're sometimes not willing to ask for everything that could be placed into a contract just as a matter of course, because they're primarily interested in maintaining the relationship so they have the access so they can sell the next property.
Right.
Right? And now I, as a lawyer, have a different call. You know, I have ethical standards just by being a lawyer that I'm required to follow, where my client's interests always come before mine.
Mm-hmm.
And agents, although there are state laws governing agency and management and all those things, aren't necessarily held to the same standards. And so whenever someone has a vested interest in your outcome, you need to have a third party looking even at the agency agreement. And sometimes an agency agreement is only one or two pages.
Mm-hmm.
That one or two pages says, I get 10 or 20% of everything that you make and go.
Yeah.
It don't take long to say that, right?
But right.
There's unbelievable consequences for your rights.
Yes.
So people need to pump the brakes for a moment, take the time, even if it's a one-hour consult with a lawyer for
mm-hmm.
$150, most of us spend that on shoes or a nice
yes.
wine.
Yeah, and you've heard it about musicians for years ago in the 60s and 70s, people who sell these, even TLC, who sell millions and millions of CDs and have like next to no, I mean, not that they didn't get paid anything, but when you hear that they might have broke out with $50,000, your jaw drops. And it's because of the contract that a lot of entertainers and book writers sign, and I do highly recommend getting some legal – working in corporate America, I can tell you, a book publishing company is looking out for their profit. They're not really looking out for your profit, and they're buying your book because they think that will help add to their profit. Now, you have to then look out for yourself because they're not in their corner swinging and boxing away for you.
That is correct.
So
and
you got
to. The time to do it is before you sign.
Yes, not after you sign and you realize, oh, my goodness, what have I done? Things like royalties and writers who sign away all rights,
right.
all rights to their work. It means you can't even put the title of your book on a T-shirt. So those are the things I would encourage writers to get a literary attorney like Tanya Marie Evans. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And I've also heard that major motion pictures, another thing when writers hear that your book's going to be made into a major motion picture and you're jumping up and down and doing flips. And you're so excited and you get caught up in the emotion. I wanted to ask you, Tanya, do you also specialize in major motion picture contracts to the author's book? You know, they be told that their book is being considered to be turned into a picture?
Yeah, what happens is usually we option the literary property for a period of time to a producer, usually like a one-off period for like 1 year. And for that year or that 18 months or however long the option agreement lasts, the producer has to go find money to finance the project, and they have the exclusive right to turn that literary property into a screenplay for purposes of motion picture or TV or whatever. And so that would be the process of turning the literary property into a motion picture. So that certainly has come up. And that's part of encouraging people to understand why this is bigger than just the words on the page, that as a literary entrepreneur, you really can become a brand. And the value of intellectual property is really in owning it, controlling it, and licensing it to maximize the value. So multiple streams, I'm all about multiple streams of revenue. And so it's, you know, having the book and the literary work, but also really understanding that you can have a trademark for a series of books. We got a little off track in talking about that, but my series of legal reference guides is a brand that has become its own thing, right? Harry Potter and Chicken Soup for the Soul, all of these series. It's not just about the individual books. Now there can be 10, 20, 30, 50 books in a series, and that trademark for that series of books become valuable as well.
Mm-hmm. So that again is, and I thank God, you're the only entertainment attorney that I know, but I thank God that it's just the information that you give in your books is so valuable. I cannot encourage anybody in the entertainment business, whether they're an author or a musician, the value of having a good entertainment or literary entertainment attorney in your corner could save you millions of dollars and years of heartache. And so here at Off the Shelf, we are so honored to have a highly experienced licensed entertainment attorney, Tanya Marie Evans. And I love that she is also an author, so she understands. She's the author of the book Shine, Seasons of Her, Contracts Companion for Writers, and Copyright Companion for Writers, and Literary Law Guide for Authors, an outstanding public speaker. As you heard, if you were here when she read from her poem Shine, so incredibly powerful, Tanya's online at www.legalwritepublications.com. I encourage you to bookmark it as a favorite. She's also online at www.iwriteandshine.com, where you can learn about some of her upcoming events. Again, she's a powerful, oh my goodness, public speaker. I think along the lines of Maya Angelou, when you think how powerful of a speaker Tanya is. I know you're the only entertainment attorney, I got to tell you, that I'm aware of. I didn't even know there was such a thing as an entertainment attorney until I met you. To be absolutely honest, I thought they were just an attorney and they just did a broad range of things. You're the only one I know who offers advice and tips the way you do at your website. And I wanted to ask you, do you do this because you're an author? Or what propels you to be, you're just so incredibly giving, Tanya. What compels you to do this?
I think it is because I'm an author as well. And I obviously want to keep my lights on, but I just feel like it's such a blessing. I've received so much from the community of writers who helped me start my company, to learn about the industry, just the strength of in numbers and when we come together. And it's almost a no-brainer for me that there needs to be access to information, right? So at the site now, I developed these free e-reports where, you know, it's like one or two pages on very discrete topics, and I try and break it down in plain English. What is a copyright? Why should you register? How do you register? Various aspects. And I'm going to do one in light of this conversation about key contract clauses. Yes, okay. I cover it in greater detail in the books, but sometimes people just need that little key to start off, to, and there's power in information. And all of this comes back. We have, you know, we all are a part of something that's bigger than ourselves. So I really believe in that very strongly, and it just makes sense that people should have access to information, and there's so many people who kind of hide it and overvalue it. It's highly valuable, and I get that, but I've done just fine in life by giving away free stuff, and so I've received an invaluable amount of information, so I'm happy to do the same.
Yeah, and I do encourage our listeners, though, to get a copy of your books, Contracts Companion for Writers and Copyright Companion for Writers and Literary Law Guide for Authors. I'm actually going to purchase a copy when this interview's over. I do already have Tanya's book, Shine, and if you were blessed to hear her read from her poem, Shine, here live on Off the Shelf today, what a blessing, what a blessing. And those who might have tuned in late, I know we have some people who joined late. I encourage you to click on the link and listen to the show again and hear Tanya read live from her poem, Shine, which was no pre-notice. You can hear just how powerful she is. I want to ask you, how did you land your I was just like, wow, Tanya is doing it. How did you land the assistant professor role at Widener University? How did you get that role, Tanya?
Oh, my, it was nothing but divine intervention. To be quite frank, I was doing some adjunct teaching at a small undergrad college here, York College in York, Pennsylvania, and I was teaching copyright, licensing, and something, and I met the dean of Widener's Law School, an African-American woman who was in her first year at the time, mm-hmm. and was looking for a property professor on the Harrisburg campus. And so I mentioned that I was interested in teaching, that I would be interested in an adjunct position at the Delaware campus. And next thing I knew, I don't know how it exactly happened, but I spent a year visiting Harrisburg and really fell in love with just the entire process of teaching. Because I do like to write. I do like to speak and all those other things. And what better way to do it with a captive audience of bright legal minds. And so that visit turned into a tenure-track position. And it was difficult because I enjoyed my practice as well, but at a certain point something has to give, particularly when you want to be on tenure track. So I took what I call an extended leave that may be extended for I don't know how many years.
Right. Oh, goodness.
But that's how it happened.
Oh, that's amazing. To get something, it's almost always that you got to let something go, even if it's temporarily. Not sure why. I know I like to go around just getting, but life works that way. And sometimes the reason we don't get the new things is because we don't want to let the old go. And it's almost like you can get something better, or if not better, just different, but you got to let this other thing go for a while. I imagine you get this question a lot, Tanya, for our listeners. She's an entertainment attorney, so is her mother. You guys are what a dynamic duo, I'm telling you. And your literary conferences, you're a powerful public speaker, a professor, a writer, an entertainment attorney. Tanya, do people ask you, how in the world do you manage to balance all of this?
I'm a very spiritual person as well. In fact, and as much as it sounds like, I've actually cut back tremendously. So I really am focused on writing and teaching and speaking, which in and of itself, any one of those things could be a full-time job. But I do feel just more balanced and blessed. I'm a regular contributor now to a new website called bythespirit.net, and it really is just a weekly topic of words of inspiration and wisdom, much like the poetry that I read earlier, and it's just another outlet and a way to stay balanced. And you can, I am so far over the I am every woman thing, it's not even funny. I have given up multitasking for 2010. We'll see how that goes, but you really do want to take time, take care of yourself. I work out, I meditate, I pray, and do those things. And sometimes I just, quite frankly, unplug. And there was a great period of time over the last year and a half or two that I had to take a moment to restructure some things. And, I'm better for it. And you really do have to take care of yourself first. And so I'm focused on mind, body, and spirit, and that helps me to have enough energy to do all this other stuff.
Wow. You know, the people I have spoken to, we just have 6 minutes left. This time went by so quickly. The people that I have spoken to here at Off the Shelf and then in other avenues of my life journey, I hear them say that they do, when you look at their life resume, you're blown away, blown out the water. And people ask me and I ask other people, how do you stay so balanced? Because you can feel a person's energy and their spirit and you always feel so balanced to me. So you ask people that and then they tell you that they realize there is a source bigger than they are, and they just take time to tap into it. Sometimes they'll tell me they unplug, like you said. They may meditate. They just they don't constantly go at 100 miles an hour in their life. They just take time to slow down and really enjoy life. But then you see how much they do, and you're just amazed. I guess it may be
telling the truth.
Yeah, but they are. Yeah. I do know a lady. She told me she meditates like an hour a day, and she's what she does is just absolutely phenomenal. So it is important to take care of yourself physically, what you eat, and to make sure you're spiritually and emotionally balanced. And you just have to get some quiet time to do that. You can't go at 100 miles an hour all the time and pull that off. I wanted to ask you, with just 5 minutes left to go, I know you speak public. You said you're coming back with your reading of your poetry live. Would you recommend that poets do speak live from their poetry? Is that a good way to expand your readership?
It is, and everybody's level of comfort is different. I remember when the first time I went, I was reading from a book, probably sitting in a chair, and I was probably somewhat, I was a little disconnected from the people who were listening. So just even understanding the gift and being out in front of people to share it, like the first level of the gift is just to get it out outside of you, get it out of you. And the next level, I think, is to share it. So it's a proper way to do it. And then from a business perspective, quote-unquote back of the room or BOR sales are very powerful when people are there and they can experience and see you. And it's far more likely that you'll get a sale after someone hears you than if they just see your name among the thousands of names out there without having any, you know, personal connection to you.
Okay, okay. And I've heard everybody I know who does do poetry or even book readings say that. With just 3 minutes left, Tanya, I got to thank you so much for taking time out of your day. It was just so just a blessing to connect with you. And then all the advice for our listeners, just so much advice that you gave just for free today that if somebody had to pay for it, they might have had to pay $100, $150, $200 for that advice just within this hour. So I thank you so much. I encourage our listeners to visit Tanya online at www.legalrightpublications.com. And also she has a website, www.iwriteandshine.com. I encourage you, you can keep up with her upcoming events and different things that she's working on. And check out her books, Shine, which is a phenomenal book, I have it, Seasons of Her, Contracts Companion for Writers, and Copyright Companion for Writers, and Literary Law Guide for Authors. She's a professor at Widener University teaching law, and she's also a licensed entertainment attorney, so she definitely knows what she's talking about. Tanya, as we close with 2 minutes left, what last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave with our listeners here at Off the Shelf?
Well, one, I want to give them something, and you too. You're not going to go out and buy any books. It's my pleasure that I'm on here, so I'm going to send you some. And I have some copies. I don't know how you want to handle it, but I have 3 copies of Literary Law Guide for Authors to give away. So I'll send that to you, and you can handle that on your list, but I wanted to leave that. And also a discount code. So anybody who puts in Turney VIP, you get $5 off your purchase of $20 or more at the website. So it's Turney VIP. And it's a $5 discount off of anything $20 or more at the site. And I also want to say honor the writing and the gift of writing in you by being the best literary entrepreneur you can be. You spent your time, all of your time in life, developing this craft, and you should take it very seriously and to protect it by doing whatever's right from a business and legal perspective to maximize the value.
Oh, thank you so much, Tanya. Thank you, thank you. Thank you, and just encourage everybody to go over to her website and check out her books. We were just so blessed to have Tanya Marie Evans here with us today. Next Saturday, 11 o'clock, we'll have Julius Thompson. He's the author of Philly Style and Philly Profile. I want to just thank everybody who tuned in today and called into today's show. We will continue to bring you authors, entertainment attorneys. Tanya's the only one I actually know right now. Publicists, literary agents, people who movers and shakers in the book industry. We will continue to bring you so you can come away with valuable advice, tips, and insight and things that will help to move your career forward. Please, again, visit Tanya Marie Evans online at www.legalrightpublications.com. and at her iWriteandShine.com so you can keep up with her upcoming events. I thank you so much for being here with us today on Off the Shelf. We're here every Saturday starting at 11 o'clock in the morning Eastern Standard Time. Please tune in to us as we continue to bring you wonderful guests. And visit me online at www.chistell.com and check out my new book, Long Walk Up, which is available through my website and also through bookstores. If you don't see it on the shelves, just go ask the bookstore clerk for a copy of Long Walk Up by Denise Turney, because it's in with Ingram Books, one of the largest distributors in the world, and they can get you a copy. Before I close, as I always tell you, I want you to remember that you're truly valued and loved, appreciated, and so blessed. Thank you, and bye for now. Tanya, I'll shoot you an email.
Okay.